Good afternoon, everybody. Joe Boma here on behalf of the Tacoma Historical Society with another Grit City story. My very special guest today, Ms. Erin Lasley, the 62nd Airlift Wing historian over on McCourt Field. How are you doing today?
Doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for meeting me today on, you know, an actual sunny day. We can see the mountain at the end of the runway.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
That's awesome. So let's dive right into it. McCourt Field, the Air Force, how did they pick, you know, sunny, great flight weather Tacoma as a home for one of the biggest bases in the country?
Well, actually, during the 1930s, the United States War Department, which is today the Department of Defense, were looking for around like six bases on the West Coast for air defense, because obviously, you know, war was heating up in both Europe and Asia. And the War Department's like, you know what, we probably need some, you know, defensive bases here. And
very nice.
McCord, which at the time was the Tacoma Airport, was chosen obviously because of its location. It's close to Seattle. It's actually sheltered by a lot of northwesterly winds because you have the Cascades, you have the Olympia, and you have settled like perfectly between these two mountain ranges. Never mind that it was kind of like, you know, this marshy, boggy field, you know, they'll fix that.
Great philandics.
So that's why Tacoma was chosen. And I believe it was in 1938, Washington State went ahead and transferred the land to the War Department, to the Army Air Corps. And they named it McCord Field after Colonel William McCord, who had just previously died in an airplane accident in Virginia, which it was fun. You know, I know everything about most things about Colonel McCord, but I didn't know that during his first assignment, he actually got in trouble as a lieutenant for riding his horse into, I believe, like the mess hall. And they told him not to do that. And I always picture, you know, Colonel McCord as this distinguished figure and everything. And then I heard that, I'm like, he was a bit of a bad boy, wasn't he? I love this.
And so, never heard of an LT getting in trouble either.
No, they never get in trouble. Angels. So 1938, that's when the land was transferred. And at the time, there were two runways and a hangar.
Okay.
When the Army got a hold of it, they added two more runways. So they had to dredge up all that bog land, put down tons and tons of gravel and other material to, you know, expand this area.
Yeah.
And they started building four large hangars, which are actually still here today.
Oh, cool.
This very large building known as the Castle. Today it's building 100. I actually get to work in that building.
Okay.
And it's this huge monstrosity. And if you actually look at it, you can kind of go, yeah, I can see how that's a castle. It was a barracks, it was a mess hall, and it was offices all in one. So you ate, slept, and worked in the same place.
Never had to leave the building.
Not dystopian at all. No. I mean, it's just like the perfect setup for today, too.
Exactly.
So lots of construction going on, hospitals, a power plant. And in June 1940, that's when the 17th Bombardment Group came to McCord, at first with their B-18s and their B-23s.
Real old school.
Real old school. And so the idea for McCord at the beginning, it was going to become a bomber training base.
Okay.
And the next month, on July 3rd, they had the official opening, and they had it on the July 4th week, so, you know, they can have this extra party.
Yep.
Naturally. I mean, they had the band concert, they raised the flag for the first time, the governor came out and spoke.
Oh, wow.
They had a 100 airship formation flyover.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, it was the party at the time.
Yeah.
And so this is before we start getting into anything remotely close to the war. And you had a couple other bombardment groups come in. By the end of 1941, there were 4,000 enlisted, about 250 officers, two warrant officers, and only four nurses.
those poor nurses.
Yeah, I mean, guys never get hurt, so
it's
fine. And that's also about the time the 17th Bombardment Group came in possession of their B-25 Mitchells.
Oh, nice.
So they were the first bombardment group in the United States to receive these.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why that's important is because obviously on December 7th, 1941, Pearl Harbor was attacked.
Yes.
And we got into the war. But, of course, we're obviously really hacked off at Japan.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And we know that it's going to be a long time till we get to the mainland.
Mm-hmm.
So this Army Air Corps, or at the time it became the Army Air Forces, this lieutenant colonel came to McCord because he's looking for a few good men for this very secret squirrel mission.
Mm-hmm.
And he chose McCord because the 17th Bombardment Group was the first ones to train in the B-25s.
Makes sense.
Because the B-25s are integral to this mission. He picks at least 10 McCord trained men,
mm-hmm.
Air crew members. And he pretty much tells them, hey, you know, this is dangerous. You probably won't make it. You may die. But I'm promising you justice. I'm promising you revenge. And, of course, these guys are like, yeah,
yeah.
Sure, why not?
It's like powerful words, you know, military guys. Like, all right, let's do this.
Let's do this. And so in April 1941, these B-25s took off from the deck of the USS Hornet.
Mm-hmm.
Bombers hadn't done this before. They hadn't launched off of an aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you see any movies, you know, like, a lot of guys are betting. It's like, you know, they're probably going to crash.
So which one's going to go right off the nose?
Yeah. But, you know, they all made it off the carrier.
Mm.
They all make it over Tokyo. And, of course, this lieutenant colonel's name was Jimmy Doolittle.
Yep.
And those 10 McCord airmen became Doolittle Raiders.
That's incredible. I mean, growing up with Air Force family and going to the Air Force Academy, I heard all about the Doolittle Raid, but I never knew it was... You know, it started really here in Tacoma.
It didn't necessarily start here,
yeah.
But, you know, some of our guys, you know, came from McCord, and they trained in Florida.
Okay.
Of course, if you go to Florida and you go to the Air Force bases there, it's everywhere. They're very proud of that, and
yep.
That is, it's awesome. So, fortunately, I believe most of the men survived.
Yep.
Some of them actually went on to become generals.
Mm-hmm.
One created a bomb site.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, these were very talented men.
Mm-hmm.
And, obviously, today, they're heroes.
Mm-hmm.
They'll always be memorialized. So that's one of the claims to fame for McCord. But during the war, McCord changed, I mean, in just those short years,
yeah.
From a bombing training base to everything. obviously,
as war necessitates sometimes.
So fighters started to show up,
mm-hmm.
for air defense. Pretty soon, they in 1944, they set up a modification center for P-39s, 38s, B-24s, and B-25s. So as a woman and also as a veteran, I kind of get a little thrill knowing we had Rosie the Riveter down the street.
Nice.
I love that legacy,
yeah.
That we have. So not only do we have Doolittle, but we have Rosie the Riveter. And then we also have the Women's Auxiliary Corps.
Mm-hmm.
They came to McCord.
Oh,
they had a few squadrons
that's
here.
That's awesome, yeah. I feel that's a, you know, military, you know, that few people even realize existed. Like, no, there were women pilots, like, cruising all around,
yeah.
The world that people just totally don't think about.
Right. Well, these WACs, they were administrative. They were, obviously, they were in the nursing corps.
Mm-hmm.
They did a little bit of everything, but we also, yes, we also had the fairing division coming in,
mm-hmm.
Which was the precursor to Air Mobility Command.
Okay.
It's like the grandfather of AMC.
Yeah.
And planes would actually come in from Seattle, where they were built, and the fairing command, which included female pilots, would come pick up the planes,
mm-hmm.
and transfer them to wherever they needed to be transferred within the United States.
Okay.
Obviously, we were a clearing station for soldiers and supplies going to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people forget Alaska. because the Japanese actually attacked the Aleutian Islands a few times, invaded,
yep.
it. A lot of that was going on. McCord blew up from 4,000, you know, enlisted,
yeah.
to over 20,000 people. And, of course, the local community,
yeah.
you know, they came in, too, to volunteer. There were women in the community coming in to actually... You know, tailor clothes and uniforms,
mm-hmm.
for the soldiers coming in and out. And And, you know, it was also sometimes a party, too. You had USO dances. You had these awesome Christmas parties, bands. Who doesn't like a USO dance?
Mm-hmm.
So that was McCord during World War II. It was a hopping place, and it was very important to the Pacific War area.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. And just hearing how that grew in such a short span, I can only imagine how much it helped the city, you know, blow up after its kind of, I don't want to say slow start in the early 1900s, but definitely helped it skyrocket a bit more.
Well, McCord did, and obviously a lot of the naval bases, you had shipbuilding here, and lots of towns in the United States grew because of the war efforts.
Yep.
If they weren't making planes, they were making ships. If they weren't making ships, they were making bombs and ammunition, all sorts of things. So it definitely was a homegrown effort.
That's incredible. So World War II ends. Good guys objectively win.
We win. Yay.
What happens to the base?
McCord starts to change again.
Yep.
So there is a slight decrease of population on the base, obviously, because, you know, we won a war.
So everyone's downsizing a little bit after the global effort.
So a few things started to change in 1947. Obviously, the Army Air Forces became the U.S. Air Force.
Yes.
McCord Field became McCord Air Force Base.
Mm-hmm.
And we welcomed the 425th Night Fighter Squadron, which is exactly what it sounds like. They fight at night. They came with their P-61 Black Widows.
Oh, nice.
And we also welcomed, for the first time, the 62nd Airlift. Today is the Airlift Wing. Okay. Back then it was the Troop Carrier Wing, which we'll talk more about later. So with all these fighter squadrons, they came in, they came out, they came in, they came out, until you finally had the 318th Fighter Squadron with their F-82 Twin Mustangs.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you reached the jet age.
Yes.
And what's also nice about 1947, with the creation of the Air Force, you also have the end of segregation in the United States military. And from my research, McCord never really had a problem with integration. Obviously, beforehand, the squadrons were segregated. You had white squadrons, you had black squadrons. But in my research, I found pictures of both black airmen and white airmen in the hospital, you know, listening to the radio together. And that, just in itself, in a picture, was huge at the time.
Yeah.
So McCord had this, you know, that we pride ourselves today, we're an Air Force of all airmen.
Yes.
So even back then, it kind of, it gave me a little bit of a happy feeling.
Oh, that's incredible to find.
So 1947 comes and goes, McCord starts to change, and then we had this little thing in 1948 over in Germany called the Berlin Airlift.
That little guy.
McCord sent 50, or approximately 50 airmen, mechanics, truck drivers, support units over there. In 1950, McCord became more of an air defense command.
Okay.
So the bombers have left. We are gearing up for the Cold War.
Yep.
Which Alaska being so close to Russia, and well, here we are next. We're the next primary military installation.
Yep. quick look at the map.
So we started increasing construction. We lengthened the runways, a new air defense tracking system, and all of the temporary World War II facilities were either upgraded or replaced.
Okay.
And some of those buildings are still here today. You know, the base theater, obviously we have the castle building, the hospital, and even the power plant's still here.
So as a veteran myself, we always joke around, man, has this building been around since the World War? Like, oh, they actually have. That explains some things. Yep.
Yeah. And we're lucky. In some Air Force bases, these buildings are considered new. If you were to go to like Scott Air Force Base, these buildings are built like a little bit before World War One. So we got some new facilities.
I'm identity. There we go.
So we're gearing up for the Cold War, and we have the 62nd on base.
Yep.
A few other fighter squadrons too, and of course there's some tensions in Korea. And
that little thing.
So we get ourselves into another war.
Yeah.
And McCord once again becomes a clearing station for soldiers, supplies, and also, which is kind of brand new in Air Force history, is the ability to airlift the wounded back home.
That's incredible.
Because before they were put on a hospital ship, and you're on a ship for weeks on your way home, especially across the Pacific. Oh, my gosh. Now, we can pick them up in Japan, you know, a stopover in Alaska, and bring them back to McCord, and then they're transferred either to Fort Lewis Hospital or other places in the United States.
That's incredible. And between, you know, that development and what everyone, you know, recognizes as MASH, just the helicopter evacuation, like, we're saving so many more lives this way now. That's an awesome thing.
Exactly. So no one ever thought, oh, well, let's just put them on a C-47.
Yeah.
So we started to do that. McCord became just the base for Korean operations.
Yeah.
So both our fighter jets and our airlift assets were involved in that war. So once again, this is also a time when jet technology is taking off.
Yep.
So you may have, 1 year you may have this fighter, a couple of years later you have a brand new Delta Dart.
Oh, God.
Because it keeps changing, it keeps evolving. Because what a lot of people don't understand is we're still in aviation infancy at this time.
Yes.
So yeah, the technology is constantly changing, but the great thing about the 1950s is the creation of NORAD.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously Canada and the United States, they're like, hey, what do you think about, you know, us teaming up just in case, you know, the Soviets decide to bomb one of us?
Yep.
So attack on one is an attack on both. Mm-hmm. So they created the North America Air Defense Command, NORAD. And the 25th NORAD region was here in Washington.
Okay.
And McCord became one of those stations. This is where you also see the SAGE system, which is the semi-automatic ground environment system.
Okay.
It's a real-time, computer-based command and control system. It's designed to protect the United States from bombers and, soon after, intercontinental ballistic missiles.
Oh. So, but can it play tic-tac-toe? That's the real question.
No, I don't word that or Galaga. You can't play those.
Okay.
Not on these systems.
I was going to throw out my old, you know, Matthew Broderick movie references. Just gonna.
Shall we play a game? So that all came to McCord, and today that's known as the Western Air Defense.
Okay.
So that's WADS.
Yep.
So yeah, McCord is just, it's everything.
Yeah.
So many different
huge
missions. And of course, you know, in the 1960s, the Delta Dart started to kind of fall away. And then we have these awesome, they're called the F-101 Voodoos.
Yep.
I love how these guys name these planes. The Voodoos. I love them. And they started took part in, this is another thing I love them naming, Operation White Shoes and College Shoes. they got creative with some of these names.
Yep.
Today, they're very inspiring. Back then, you're just like, yeah, White Shoes. That sounds like I like that name.
It's a name. It works.
So they were flying these fighter missions to Alaska a lot, obviously, because it's the Cold War, and it's more defense measures. So that's the 1950s and 60s. You know, the Cold War, you can't emphasize that enough. But, of course, we have this thing called the Vietnam conflict.
All these little things that just keep popping off.
They just keep coming up. I mean, it's, I think of that that book by Ken Follett, A World Without War.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but it sounds nice.
One day we can hope.
We'll get there one day. So here comes Vietnam. And, of course, like World War II, like Korea, McCord becomes the, here comes all the soldiers, here comes all the airlift, let's get some fighters out to Southeast Asia, and it's another boom.
Mm-hmm.
And you also had something very significant. Okay. During the Vietnam War, we had the Pueblo crisis.
Okay.
And this is one of those little known things of history that at the time was like, holy crap, this is big. And now we're just like, oh, Pueblo what?
Mm-hmm.
So in 1968, a Navy ship called the USS Pueblo was doing some reconnaissance work off the coast of North Korea. I'm not saying, like, you know, they were a mile off the coast. I'm saying they're like 100 okay. miles yeah. off the coast of North Korea.
International waters.
They were in international waters, so they thought.
Ah.
It's up for debate even today if they were or they weren't. Okay. Obviously, North Korea's like, no, they definitely were in not. Our waters. Yep. And we're just like, dude, guys, come on. So, in January in 1968, the USS Pueblo and their crew are operating off of North Korea. And they get assailed by North Korean forces, naval forces, and air forces.
Yeah.
And so they're not a slick boat. They're not going to go very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to do all these countermeasures. Man, they tried. And they started burning all sensitive documents and everything like that until they were captured. One of their crew member was even killed when the North Koreans started firing upon them.
Wow.
These guys weren't playing around.
Yeah.
So they captured the crews. And, of course, the United States is like, what do we do?
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't really want to bargain with them.
Yeah.
And because even back then, you know, we'd just gone out of the war with North Korea. We're in a war with Vietnam. You don't want to hack off the Soviets. And we think the Soviets are behind this. And actually find out years later, the Soviets were hacked off that the North Koreans did this. So this was all on them. So
everyone was mad at North Korea. Where have I seen that before?
I don't know. It just history repeats itself. So these guys were held captured.
Yeah.
And interesting thing about this is that they got the ever-living crud beaten out of them because they posed for this picture.
Yeah.
And they were flipping off North Korea. You know, they were flipping the bird.
Yeah.
And they took the commander, and they're like, listen, we're going to start killing your guys in front of you unless you confess that, you know, you're guilty. And he said, okay.
That was a fun choice.
Yeah, I have to write out the confession. So he's writing this out, and he gets to where he's like, I pee on North Korean.
Mm-hmm.
I pee on, you know, the great Kim Jong Un. Was it ill or un at the time? But but he's spelling it P-A-E-A-N. So they don't get it.
Yeah.
So it's not a real confession.
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, here in the United States, we're like, nope, we got to go and get our guys.
Yeah.
This was a massive buildup. Kind of like if you were to see one of our adversaries bombing one of our bases today, we get the 82nd Airborne and we go.
Yeah.
That's what this was back then. So you had not only 318th Fighter Squadron here with their F-106s going over there.
Mm-hmm.
You also had the 62nd Military Airlift Wing. They're taking all these extra soldiers and everything over to South Korea. This was just a massive buildup in the middle of the Vietnam War.
Yeah, not like they're busy or anything.
No, they're not busy. They're not making, you know, regular trips over to Southeast Asia. So they go. Right. They built it up to the point where they were doing constant flights over to South Korea. And this happened until December 1968, when the naval men were finally released. And I do encourage anybody, if they're interested in that, to definitely read up on it. It's very interesting, like little note in history.
Yeah, no, definitely.
So in 1968, the 325th Fighter Wing, it becomes deactivated because wings, they come and go. And the 62nd Military Airlift Wing became the host unit.
Okay.
And it would stay that way until 2010.
Wow, 50-year run.
Yeah. And so, well, you have the war going on, and the base is still doing other activities, such as this little notation in, you know, Washington history. I don't think anybody knows about this guy named D.B. Cooper.
Nah.
Yeah, probably.
Insignificant.
It's very insignificant, but we have that little notation in our history, because after it happened, two of our fighter jets went up and started tracking the plane as it made its way to Reno.
Oh, wow.
The base also volunteered parachutes, but I think they got that from the parachutes from someplace else.
Yeah.
And they even, volunteers from McCord even went out to help search the area after all this was over.
Oh, that's cool.
So McCord even has their little emphasis on that. I think my favorite part about McCord is that it is such a community.
Mm-hmm.
And you find that with military bases all across the United States.
Naturally.
in their ability to welcome people. When the Vietnam War ended, there were a couple of years where we just really weren't in it until 1975 when Saigon fell.
Yep.
And we'll definitely talk about this when we talk more about the 62nd Airlift Wing. Mm-hmm. There was Operation Baby Lift and New Arrival. So all these Vietnamese infants and all these refugees were coming to the United States, and a lot of them came through McCord.
Yeah, I mean, it was the hub going out the whole time. May as well be the hub coming back.
Right. So McCord and Travis Air Force Base, they were the two predominant military installations where these refugees were coming into the United States. Mm-hmm. And the airmen and the soldiers obviously came out in force, but the families did too. They set up a refugee welcoming center. Mm-hmm. They took care of these infants and these children when they came in and before they went to their new homes.
That's incredible.
They were volunteering. I mean, there were so many people volunteering that they almost had to turn away people. And donating clothes and food. Even the Girl Scouts, the Brownies, came out to support. And it was wonderful. And then it just warms my heart because I think a lot of outside people who aren't very familiar with the military, they see it as this very cold institution. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously we have all these strict rules, but they don't get that we're still a family and we're going to take care of anybody that comes into our home.
Yeah.
So that, like I said, it just warms my heart. I love that part of McCord history.
Yeah.
And it's the same way today. You still get that feeling of everybody's more than willing to help one another.
That's just an incredible thing to be a part of.
And like I said, I mean, I like it. That's why I'm a military veteran. I was in the Coast Guard. And, of course, I had years in the outside, the civilian sector. And it's just like, you know what? I came back to the military, only this time as a civilian. So that's why I came back. So, you know, McCord keeps going on through the 1970s. In the 1980s, we started integrating women into the service, which is just, yay, finally. You know, there's no more all-male dormitories anymore. We put the women in there, too. So another one of those tiny little blips on Washington history, you had this little mountain in May 1980 that decided to, you know, erupt.
Yeah. I heard about that once or twice, I think.
Yeah, May 1980, Mount St. Helens, it had a pretty big eruption. And McCord actually sent out units. We had the C-130s from our tactical airlift squadron. They went out with to provide comm support for the search and rescue efforts.
Okay.
And the only active duty Air Force unit to help with the search and rescue was the 602nd Tactical Air Control Wing.
Okay.
And so they were flying their helos, their CH-53s out. And lots of great pictures in my archive about that.
Oh, that's cool.
I think one of my favorite stories out of that was, obviously, this ash is diverting a lot of aircraft.
Yeah.
some of them are coming to McCord, waiting for the ash to dissipate so they can move on. So we actually had a distinguished visitor come in.
Mm-hmm.
Royalty came to McCord.
Really?
Yeah. So after the Mount St. Helens eruption, Prince Philip, his plane was diverted from Vancouver and landed here at McCord.
Huh.
He came in. He signed the guest book. The wing commander greeted him. I don't know if they had tea or if there was refreshments, but he was here for a few hours. And we have some pretty awesome pictures of that. I'm like, yeah. Okay.
There you go.
You know, even though we're big, you know, we love our government and everything. It's still nice because we're all like, oh, royalty. Okay.
Something we don't have. It's neat.
Yeah. So Mount St. Helens was a pretty big thing during the time. I believe it was like a week later, there was a second eruption.
Yep.
And we had to evacuate 26 aircraft. And we did it in 4 hours and 18 minutes.
That is impressive.
That's extremely impressive. And then, of course, in August, there was another eruption. We got ash, which was actually just a little dusting. If you look at the pictures of Fairchild at the time.
Oh, my.
They got buried. And the interesting thing is, during the first eruption, they were going to have an air show.
Really?
It's like the day before the air show. They got covered. and ash. They had to evacuate all these guest planes. It was crazy. It's like, thanks, Mother Nature.
Yeah.
You ruined my weekend again.
Making light of that.
Making light of that. You know, I'm a historian. I got to look at it
exactly,
a different.
Exactly. I know fully.
So the 80s go on. The SAGE system is retired, and we get a new air defense computer. Maybe on this one, you can play your, you know, your games, your Atari games. And also, the Air Force announced that, you know, we're going to start moving fighter planes down to the Oregon National Guard. They're going to take over this mission.
Okay.
So the air defense is going to stay, mm-hmm. but all the assets are going to be moved. So that's when you start seeing this transition.
Okay.
Though the fighters are being moved, we do get the A-10 Warthogs.
Oh, everyone's favorite.
I love those. It was the 354th Fighter Squadron. Mm-hmm. And if you've never heard an A-10, you don't know what it's like to be an American. It is the sound of freedom. If you go next door to Lewis, these soldiers would be like, oh, yeah, that's a good day when those guys show up.
Yeah, so in my prior life, I got to control those guys all the time in little mountain valleys. And seeing a plane like that fly over your head about 10, 20 meters off the side of a mountain is kind of awe-inspiring before, you know, you even hear the famous bird.
You feel it deep in your heart.
And just that rumble.
You feel so patriotic. I love these guys. And we have one of their planes in our airport, too. So it's just kind of like, yeah, we're awesome. So those guys come in 1993. Mm-hmm. Their primary duty is to support Fort Lewis at the time.
Yep.
And they also become one of the most deployed units within the Air Force.
That's understandable.
Later on in the 90s, the Northwest Air Defense Sector actually becomes the Western Air Defense Sector.
Okay.
So now we have WADS.
There we go.
Which is just next door to where we're recording today.
Yep.
And WADS is very special, obviously, because they protect the western portion of the United States. Mm-hmm. They have this wonderful history, and they're incredibly significant after 9/11.
Oh, yeah.
Not only are they keeping watch on the skies at 9/11, because the government shut down all air travel.
Just watching, you know, the air travel map from that day is just incredible to see it just disappear.
It's just a blank sky.
Yeah.
And so these guys have to, and ladies, have to keep an eye on the sky. It's like, hey, you know, we got the 747 coming in. What is it? Oh, it's just a guy running out of fuel. They can't make it to where they need to go. Mm-hmm. But they're also sending out fighters. So this is Operation Noble Eagle, mm-hmm. where we have over, I believe, 100 fighters across the nation that are patrolling domestic skies. Mm-hmm. And with that, that's 13,000 people that have to help. And that's over 150 tankers keeping these fighters in the air.
Wow.
It is so impressive. And you're talking over 20,000 air missions during this time.
That's a wild number. Just thinking how much effort goes behind a single sortie, let alone.
Right. It's constant. It's 24/7. And this went on for quite a few months. WADS is just, we always hear when we give tours and everything about the 62nd, about our fighter squadrons, about Doolittle. Mm-hmm. And it's like, guys, here's the Western Air Defense. These guys are crucial.
Yeah.
And that's why I love McCord during this time.
Yeah, definitely.
So after 9/11, the base also jumped in. Is a very obviously stressful time for those few weeks.
Yes.
Security was just, I'm pretty sure even the deer and the rabbits on McCord got carted at the gates. We housed lots of FEMA teams on their way to New York, D.C., Pennsylvania.
Naturally.
And we also did a lot of airlifting for 9/11 as well, and getting these teams and supplies and emergency equipment and blood to where they needed to be. Yeah. And once again, McCord started to change. Mm-hmm. We entered this new era of this global war on terrorism, and Afghanistan and Iraq And we are constantly deploying people, mm-hmm. not only from McCord, but also from Fort Lewis. And in 2010, February 1st, McCord had one of the most massive changes in its mm-hmm. history, where it ceased to be McCord Air Force Base.
Okay.
And Fort Lewis ceased to be Fort Lewis, and it became Joint Base Lewis-McCord.
One big happy family.
One big happy family under the Army's jurisdiction.
Boo. I mean, what? I'm not a former Air Force guy. Don't mind.
Well, it just opened up a new era, and it created a closer partnership. And since then, it definitely has a different feeling.
Yeah.
It has a bigger mission feeling.
Okay.
So that's a little bit about the history of McCord.
Yeah.
There's obviously a lot more. If anyone out there has base access, I encourage them, you know, come to McCord. Our museum's open. It's been closer the past 2 years because of the pandemic.
Glad it's back.
But it's back. It's open. Was at the quote-unquote ribbon-cutting ceremony a couple weeks ago, and it was just like, oh, this is great. We have a fantastic air park. It's, in my personal opinion, it's one of the nicer air parks in our museum and history program.
Awesome.
And I know our curator, he's very proud of it. Mm. But yeah, so that's McCord history in a nutshell.
Before we let you go, do you have any favorite, like, quirky little history stories or, you know, little anecdotes that people would definitely not know about that's, you know, safe for a podcast?
So I have one. I love hearing it, but it's a pet peeve at the same time.
Sorry.
So in the castle, Building 100, as we call it, mm-hmm. you know, built in, you know, the very early 40s, people would come up to me all the time. They're like, yeah, the basement's haunted.
Oh,
and
no.
It's like, well, why is the basement haunted? Well, there's a morgue down there. Why was there a morgue down there?
What?
And so everybody tells me about the morgue in the basement.
Yeah.
It's like, y'all, the hospital was just right across the street. There wasn't a morgue in the basement. And I'm still waiting for this day to somebody prove me wrong. You know, bring me the building print that says there was a morgue in the basement, and I will, every single tour I give, I will mention that. So that's one of my little things. But we definitely have some ghost stories
okay.
in the building. I think half of them are made up, which just makes it even better.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something, one of those anecdotes I really love, history and ghost stories.
Good to know. Also, I might have to go digging through the basement of Building 100 now. And
yes.
See what we can find.
Yes, let's crawl around there. It's great.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that awesome story. You shine so much light on things I never knew. Basically, McCord has a home base of the evolution of military aviation, as helping with the Doolittle raid, helping evolve medical evacuations across the world, the Pueblo crisis, Operation Baby Lift, the Mount St. Helens response, Western Hit Effect Center, 9/11, and just all the moving pieces around the world of the U.S. military. It pretty much comes out of McCord in one way or another. So, wow, thank you for that knowledge drop.
No, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. And for all you listeners out there, that was Joe Boma with Ms. Erin Lasley, 62nd Airlift Wing Historian, and that was another Grid City story.